chapter number 5, at the very end of the chapter. And we want to consider tonight gifts curiously wrapped. This season of gift giving and exchanging. And God is always, God is a giving God. He's always giving gifts. Some of them are curiously wrapped. We've been working through this book in the teen, young adult Sunday school. And somehow we have this tonight for the, and we'll take this up here. Up to this point in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon has shown that enjoyment, the very ability to enjoy things, is a gift from God. He's also set forth the proposition that this gift, the gift of enjoyment, the gift, the capacity to enjoy things, is a gift preferable to vast possessions. In other words, you might have the gift to enjoy things, a supernatural gift of contentment, and not have vast possessions. And the gift of the ability to enjoy things is preferable to vast possessions. And he's also shown, up until this time in the book of Ecclesiastes, that acquiring possessions and all other events are regulated by a divine plan. And for everything, there's a time and a season, a purpose under heaven. And I think he mentions this 28 times in the beginning of chapter 3, the time to build, the time to tear down, the time to weep, the time to laugh, and so on. There's a plan in it all. There's a time for and a purpose for everything under heaven. And he sums up what he said in that first section. In this, he comes to the end of that section in verse 18 of chapter 5, and notice what he says. Behold, that which I've seen. It is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth and hath given him power to eat thereof and to take his portion and to rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. You can see there, things and the ability to enjoy those things are the gift of God. Verse 20 means, it says, he shall not much remember the days of his life because God answered him in the joy of his heart. When you're enjoying your life in the will of God, it goes fast. And lots of you can give testimony to that. In verse 1 of chapter 6, we begin a new section. In this section, which is really central to the whole argument of the book, and he is, there is sort of a, his title in this, Solomon's title, is really that of a, he calls him the preacher, not a preacher as we would think of one today, but as a kind of a guide, sort of a guide through a debate. And he is taking up various points and developing them, and he is, he's got an argument, a case that he's making, and here he's going to apply his conclusions as you look at things and say, did you just tell me that the ability to enjoy things and things in general are a gift from God, and he has a time and a purpose for everything, and that's what he said, and that's what I said, and you might say, but I have some questions about that. What about the apparent inequities? What about the obvious inequalities in the distribution of many things? It doesn't look like a easily discernible plan. And so he is going to apply his what he has developed so far, that there's a time and a purpose for everything under heaven. The ability to enjoy things is a gift from God. And now he's going to take this thesis, and he is going to set it in your lap relative to cases where you would have, and I would have, naturally, some questions. You'd say, I like the idea of that. But what about these different situations where it just doesn't seem like this is a fit. So he's going to talk about, I call them curiously wrapped gifts, because I think you'll see in this that God's doing many things that if you let him have his way with you, you'll see it's right, that there is a plan to it. And the alleged inequalities and apparent unfair variations in providence are an illusion on our side, and I think you'll see he doeth all things well. For time's sake, I'm not going to read the whole section. We'll just read a few verses at a time. We'll begin there at verse 1 down to, say, verse 5. There is an evil which I've seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God hath given riches and wealth and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul of all that he desireth. Yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eateth it. This is a vanity, and it is an evil disease. If a man beget 100 children and live many years, so that the days of his years be many, and his soul be not filled with good, and also that he have no burial, I say that an untimely birth is better than he. For he cometh with vanity, and departeth in darkness, and his name should be covered with darkness. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun, nor anything. This hath more rest than the other. Here he is now going to evaluate outward fortunes. And in verses 1 through 12, you might like to write this some in the margin, somewhere in the margin. Prosperity is not always or necessarily good. Or you could just put, is prosperity always good? If you want to put it in the form of a question, since that's really how it comes across here. Is it always good? Now, you and I, when you watch, if you watch a TV show where they make money for getting answering the right questions, the winner is the one who gets all the money. You say, there's the winner. Is the winner the one who gets all the cash? Is he really the winner? From the outward appearance, it looks like the people who get all the breaks are really the winners. Are they? You know, that would be the complaint. But we might naturally have somebody who seemed to be on the bottom of the totem pole for a while might say, you know, you said there's a plan, ability to get, God gives things, ability to enjoy them, but it doesn't seem to be happening. Well, you let him have his way and give him time, but he's now going to develop this idea. If prosperity is not always or necessarily good. For example, he'll talk here about wealth, honor, numbers of children, length of days. These would be things that, for example, a Hebrew would particularly value. Children, I mean, if you didn't have any children, that was a catastrophe. If you didn't, and the more, you would naturally be presumed to be a happy person. Maybe and maybe not, though. Notice what he says here. For example, verses 1 and 2, wealth. Here is a person who has riches. Most people want that, don't they? Wealth and honor. So he wanteth nothing. In other words, he has an abundance of riches, wealth, honor. He's got maybe many bank accounts and lots of cash in all of them. Lots of people know this man, or I suppose it could be a woman, and he has honor, wealth, riches, wants nothing that person could imagine, really, and yet he has no power to enjoy it. None. And not only does he not have any, he has all this, but he doesn't have anyone to give it to. Look at a stranger ends up with it, end of verse 2, but a stranger eateth it. And do you know that there are people like that? There are people who've got cash galore. Lots and lots of cash. Lots and lots of riches. Boats and cars and property. And do you know they are not enjoying it? And do you know they're not going to enjoy it? And do you know who's going to get it when they go? In many cases, it'll be a stranger. And that which you look out on the outside and said, but he's got boats and properties and cash and honor. And yes, you'll find this would not be uncommon that these people would be perfectly miserable. So it isn't always on the outside what it looks like on the inside. Well, he changes the scenario. He says, all right, let's change it a little bit. Look at verse 3. If a man beget 100 children, obviously that would be highly unusual, and it's hyperbole for sake of illustration. But it says there, if he has 100 children, that's a Hebrew, that would be great. A big family like that. If you beget 100 and live many years, you know, no one was hoping to die early in those days. Their emphasis was more on this side. So that his years be many and his soul be not filled with good. In other words, here's a person with a long, long life. Or none of you say, are we have anyone here who say, I'm hoping to die in the next 2 years. You say, no, I'm hoping to live a long life. Well, here's one who had the long life. And here's the one who had many children, probably presumably healthy. But notice, such people, there are such situations, and his soul be not filled with good. In other words, he didn't come to really know the Lord, or she didn't come to know the Lord, and didn't have the capacity to enjoy all those years. And what were all those years after all? Compounded sorrow, not compounded blessing, compounded sorrow. And he says there, he says, a person with a long life, many children, but no gift of joy, he says, an untimely birth is better than he. Probably he means there, someone, a stillborn child. Because the stillborn child, death at birth would be better. They would go free from the suffering and the long, joyless years of a joyless man. He said it would be better. That's a strong figure to show that things from the outside are not always what they are on the inside. He's not exaggerating. There are plenty of folks who have lived a long time and maybe have many children, and they are not contented people. Their life was not a blessing to them or really anyone else. Look at verse 6. Yea, though he live 1,000 years twice told, yet hath he seen no good. Do not all go to one place. That which was envied by the onlookers, so long a life did he live. Yet, it's all those children, and again, all he'd be saying is, yeah, but they all went to one place. They all died. And he died without the gift of enjoyment. And what he really had was not a long, joyous life, but one long compounding of sorrows. Because he didn't really know the Lord. Look at verse 7. Here is labor aimed at pleasure that never arrived. All the labor of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not filled. The human beings, here's the idea of a man laboring. I am going to make my life something. Well, life is a gift from God, and you can make something of it when you're walking in his steps. When we walk with the Lord in the light of his word, he sheds the glory on his way. But here is labor aimed at pleasure without God's help in it. And it's a destiny that it never arrived. They never got there. The labor for his mouth. Mouth has the idea of satisfaction. Labor that never arrived. Look at verse 8. For what hath the wise man more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? Here's the point he's making here, that self-satisfaction is a quest out of man's reach. Rich, poor, fool, or wise, that it's not within their grasp is the point he's making. It's a gift from God. Now he notices verse 9, he gives some advice. This is a wisdom book, and Solomon is like a skilled, wise tutor coming by your side to help you have skill as you make your pilgrimage through a curious world and a dangerous world. He begins to give advice here. He says, here's a better alternative. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. By this he means, making do with what we have is better than wishing for what we don't have. much, much better. Look at verse 10 and 11. That which hath been named already and is known that it is man, neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he, seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? Now this means that mortal man can never break the link that God's established between earthly things and the dissatisfaction of those things apart from knowing the Lord. The man can do many things, try many things, but he's going to end up dissatisfied because there's a link. God has established a link that can't be broken between things and having them and enjoying them. And so, try as he will, the more he talks, verse 11, seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? The more talks, the more solutions he spins out, the more he proves he's empty. And his solutions and his talk brings him no closer. So, in other words, the ordinance of God has decreed the incapacity of this world's things to yield satisfaction and enjoyment. We don't live in a happy world. There just is not an abundance of contented people that are enjoying their life. And now he comes back really to the sovereignty of God and the plan. Look at verse 12. The quest eludes so many people. You know, we have now in America, I think the divorce rate is just still soaring for the people who even bother still to get married. And none of these people at the beginning said, you know, we're going to be miserable. None of them do that. But they are. Otherwise, they wouldn't be, you know, back getting a divorce. And this is the richest, freest country in the world. And many of you go to work each day, you hear the people grumbling. They grumble if there's too much work to do. They grumble if there's not enough work to do. They grumble if the pay stays the same. They grumble if it went up, it didn't go up enough. If they got a new benefit program, it's too slow, it doesn't work well. If it works well, it's not rich enough. And they're just not happy campers, are they? You're not dwelling in a bunch with a bunch of contented people. So look at verse 12. For who knoweth what is good for man in this life? See, he's answering objections here, saying you would think a person with wealth, honor, properties, that you would say, surely that guy's really a happy fellow. I'd like to switch places with him because I don't have multiple bank accounts and properties and boats and all this, and I'd like to try that. He said, well, he says it's very common for people like this to have all this stuff, but they're not happy. It's not making them happy. They're not making anyone else happy. So at the end, he asks this question after he goes through these various scenarios, long life, many kids. You'd say, although that guy's really got it made, don't be too sure. He says, who knows what is good for man in this life? Well, we know who knows what's good in this life. It's the planner. It's the originator. It's the sovereign God who presides over it all. He's the one who knows. Who knows what's good for man in this life, all the days of his vain life? That means the quickness of it here. Which he spendeth as a shadow. You know, it's here and gone. For who can tell what a man shall be after him under the sun? So what should we do? Who knows the future? God, only God. He's the one who knows what's good. He knows what's advantageous for the people of his grace and mercy. And now look, if you would, at chapter 7. Now he will sort of switch tracks. In verses 1 to 12, he's developed this thesis that I just whizzed through. And that is this. Prosperity is not always good. Under the sun, as you and I look around and say, wow, look at what she's got. Look at what he's got. Look at what they're getting. Won't they be happy? If only I had that. If only I could live that long. If only I had that many kids. If only I had Ooh, be careful. That's what Solomon's saying. He said, be careful. He knows that's the natural way we would look at it. He says, wait a minute. Not so fast. In this world, an abundance of things, or a long life, and many children, and other these, and a bright mind that can spin out new ideas, that doesn't guarantee anything. He says, for example, not only, as he said, be careful about the assumption prosperity always is good. The person who came home from the show with all the cash came home the winner. He might not have come home the winner. And now he's going to develop the opposite one. Not only is prosperity not always good, but adversity is not always bad in the plan of God. And that's undoubtedly where we have some folks tonight. For example, notice now, this, as Walt Kaiser pointed out, this question at the end of verse 12, and he's getting ready to change, is like a peg on which he's going to hang a bunch of proverbs. So what is good? If it isn't, if long life, many children, much wealth, honor, and possessions, and a brainy person, if all that, well, what is good? Now, that, glad you asked, Solomon says. Look at verse 1. He's going to name, you'll see, this word better. Come up, he'll say. Now we're going to look at some curiously wrapped gifts. Some of you would say, now this doesn't seem like a gift. I would rather have the long life. I'd rather have the cash and so on. So notice this. A good name is better than precious ointment in the day of death and one's birth. In those days, good water supply was rare, and people used ointments to smell better. Expensive perfumed ointment is the idea, and it's very expensive, very hard to get. But expensive ointment, however good it was in prize in those days, and even I suppose this day, it has temporary effects. But a good name means a life, a name that has character attached to it, like Teddy Roosevelt or Charles Spurgeon or Augustine or John Wesley. We would, a good name is better than, as a lasting thing, far more lasting. By birth, he means the day of one's death better than one's birth. You know, whenever a lady has a baby, a healthy baby boy, they would almost automatically rejoice, and I guess rightly so. But not every lady who brought a healthy baby boy into this world keeps on rejoicing, do they? Some mother brought Hitler into the world. You know, once he was a little baby boy too. And I suppose his mother said, we got a healthy baby. And I suppose they were happy for a while. When he said one's death is better than his birth, by this he means that the day of death is better if it was a God-fearing life. Now you take someone who went through their life, as Solomon said, and knew the Lord and had a good name. Their death ends a beautiful story as far as under the sun. That's the idea. Look at this one. Verse 2. It's better to go into the house of mourning than to go into the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men. The living will lay it to his heart. He's saying, you know, what is good? You know, if long life, many kids, and lots of wealth and cash and honor and stuff like that. If that's not good, well, what is good? He says, well, Solomon says, don't rule these out. A good name. And then he talks here about the house of mourning. Now, what could be good about that? And he says here, in the house of mourning, it doesn't mean that you live there constantly. But he says, it's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of feasting, for that's the end of all men. The living will lay it to heart. In other words, being in the presence of sickness and sorrow helps a person be wise and focus on what's really valuable, what's really helps you bring a sober assessment to the true state of things. So there's a value there. Look at verse 3 and 4. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by it The sadness of the countenance, the sadness of the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. The heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Again, he's talking about sorrow has an indispensable work to do. You know, a person immersed in wealth and partying all the time ends up to be, that's really how Sodom was. Sodom was a rich partying town. And they just became so jaded and sunk deeper and deeper. It was a tragedy. Sorrow has a work to do. Sorrow is better than laughter. Doesn't mean laughter is not a blessing, but in a world like this, blessed are they that mourn. They'll be comforted. Sorrow has a work to do. That's the point. And that we should resent when God brings something in our life that's sad, that sobers us. That's the point. But some of these are curiously wrapped gifts. And Solomon says, this might be better than a constant flow of prosperity. Look at verse 5 and 6. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise. He's talking about what's better. You know, this goes with the question all the way back in verse 12. You know, what is good? If having a material bonanza and long life and isn't necessarily good, well, what is good? Solomon says, I want to tell you about some curiously wrapped things that you might not think off the bat are good, but he says they are good. He says, for example, it's better to hear the rebuke of a wise man than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of a fool, is also his vanity. Almost no place could be worse for a person to be tonight or almost any night of the week than one of these clubs down at Virginia Beach. That's the idea there. The song of fools. That is what that whole strip is about. It's about nothing else really but the song of fools, and it is a poison. Far better as someone who's somewhere else hearing the rebuke of a wise man than to be down there hearing the song of fools. Far, far better. Look at, now we switch to a slightly different one. We conclude with the last section here. Adversity and prosperity both bring temptations. So here's a section on temptation, beginning at verse 7. Surely oppression maketh a wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. This is what this is saying is really wise men and really wise women can be corrupted. Now he's on another subject relative to temptations. A gift destroys the heart. Be very careful about receiving gifts. And authority, a person with some influence at work or somewhere can be tempted to abuse that. Do a really foolish thing. Make you like a madman. And we see this around the world with the petty dictators and the bigger dictators. But what about when you get one of these curiously wrapped gifts, as many of you have gotten and will get in the upcoming year, some adversity? We have people have adversity today. What will your temptation be? Look at verse 8. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud heart. Well, one thing is impatience. Impatience under adversity in God's divine plan. He has it out of... I couldn't possibly guess or make out my own schedule of when I need adversity. And you couldn't either. I would put all somewhere far away. So would you. But God hasn't. And when it comes to you, and it will come, verse 8, the end is better than the beginning, and you be patient. And wait, is temptation to be impatient, especially in America, is a disaster. Have it now. Have it now. Have it now. We are people of instant gratification, and it's fatal to us. That's a temptation. In pride and impatience. Here's an interesting one. Verse 9. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. I clipped this article out of the newspaper from last Monday. And the title is Man Shoots Friend Over $20 Bet. Notice this. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry. Anger rests in the bosom of fools. A man fatally shot his friend with a high-powered rifle in a dispute over a $20 bet on the South Carolina Clemson football game, authorities said Sunday. James Walter Quick, 42, was charged with murder in the shooting of Richard Allen Johnson, 43. The two had bet $20 on the annual game, with Quick taking South Carolina, which won. Lexington County Sheriff James Dutt said, they drank beer all afternoon and watched the game Saturday at Johnson's home and began to argue about the bet after the game. And this guy shot his friend with a high-powered rifle, shot him to death over a $20 bet. Look at that again. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry. Anger makes fools of all of us. Anger is against you. Haste is against you. And this man is going to spend the rest of his life probably in jail. He's hasty and angry and unwise about drink. You know, that's an easy thing for any of us. Anybody can be hasty and angry. Things aren't going well and storm out of the house and out the driveway, and your whole life can be altered by but one fit of anger. One. And wouldn't it be good in the beginning of the day and say, I don't know what this day is going to bring in the sovereign God's plan for me. Maybe I'm going to have some challenging things that will provoke me to anger. Maybe I'll be tempted to injure even a friend. Wouldn't it be good at the beginning of the day to say, dear Lord, today, please help me not to be hasty and impatient and be a slave to my temper and my anger. Anger, Solomon says, in all of life, in God's plan, it's going to include some stretches. You're going to be tempted to be sore angry. My anger has made a fool of me many times, and folks, your anger will make a fool of you. Try to remember that. So that's the wise man saying, in this world, this is a puzzling world. It is a puzzling providence. And you make sure and pray specifically about this, about anger. Don't you let your anger and haste destroy you. Shot his friend for $20. This is the last couple verses we look at. Look at verse 10. Say not thou, what is the cause that the former days are better than these, for thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. He's not dealing with temptation. There's a sanction on temptation. And in God's providence, it's easy to be whining for the good old days. I bet you hear that all the time. No, this company was really better under the boss back then. The good old days, the good old days, the good old days, the good old days. Well, these aren't the good old days. This is today. And whining and always living in the past is against you as well. Don't say that. Don't sigh for the good old days. That is usually a substitute for action and proper thought. You can study history and sort out the good points and the bad points and all such as that. But living in the past, whining about the good old days, this is not wisdom. This does not help you get through, you go forward in God's providential plan. Well, look at these last two, and we'll look at and stop here. Wisdom is good with an inheritance. and there is profit to them that see under the sun. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. And he talks here about being wise in the fear of God, patient. And if God blesses you with an inheritance, with wealth, or with a trial, we accept those things from God. We accept them wisely. This is what it means. This is part of what it means to look at things wisely and to live wisely. Proverbs 8:35 says, "Whoever finds me finds life." Well, we're going to stop there. And I hope you believe that God has a plan for you. And I hope at this Christmas season, as you are still in the richest country in the world, I hope you enjoy eating all the food. You all probably eat too much. Well, I'm going to, wherever I go, where there's pumpkin pie, I'm eating it. I just am. Wherever there's gifts, I'm going to enjoy giving them and taking them. And I don't know, maybe we have something that we don't like will happen. I hope not, but does. We accept that too, won't we? And this world now knows very little about joy. This is not a happy place. It just isn't. Even though at Christmas season they sing about it, and we get to hear our songs in the stores for a little while, I'm going to enjoy them. I hope you enjoy them. And I hope you demonstrate to people. You know, there will be kids 10 minutes after those presents are open, they'll already be comparing them with their brothers. He got that. You just open what you get. Thank the Lord you've got it. Enjoy it. And do what the passage said. Thank the Lord for what you have. Let's bow for prayer, shall we? And would you just ask the Lord to give you wisdom and wants to enjoy what you have, not to be envious or jealous or doubting about what you have or don't have. And would you just ask the Lord to give you a supernatural contentment? I will never leave thee nor forsake you. Be content with such things as you have, for he has said, I'll never leave you. And our Heavenly Father, we thank you for presiding over our lives. We thank thee for helping us see. And prosperity, as the world understands, is not always good. And adversity, the world understands, is not always bad. We thank thee for the mix in our lives. We ask God help us to be wise, and we ask you would incline our hearts more and more to let thee have thine own way with each of us. And we pray with thanksgiving in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, we have time for this one and maybe two songs. I'd feel if we could sing. Let him have his way with thee. And then if we have a good Christmas song, we want to sing Joy to the World, or whatever you have picked out, Phil, please, we could sing it one more.
Okay, 367. 367, way with me.
Would you live for Jesus and be always good and good? Would you walk with me when we look at the Lord? Would you be let him have his way with me. It's hard to thank him what you want with me. It's hard to thank him what you want with me. It's hard to tell your father you will be. What's best for you to have his way with me? Would you have a make me free and follow every song? Happy never that comes like every moment. Would you have a dream that you never call? Let him have his way with me. It's
Attention and